Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Televisions, the podcast, an audio companion to the television website and a show made by Anglophiles for Anglophiles. I'm not Lacey Blogger Mylis, because she's not here. I'm Annie Bundle, and Lacey is actually on vacation in London, in fact, while we are recording this and while you are listening to this. So she's instead today, I have Lacey's boss and also my boss, though once removed, Nick.
Hello. Good to be here.
It's been like a year since we've had Nick on. If you are a longtime fan of the show, you will know that Nick only comes on for two things. One of which is to soccer the pod, which we are not soccering the pod today, for the record. Despite Welcome to Wrexham being a show that is coming back, we are not actually soccering this pod. Instead, we are doing the other reason that Nick comes on the show, which is Call the Midwife. For that, we are bringing back Megan, who has been our recapper this season. Hi, Megan.
Hi.
Now that I've introduced you both, I feel the intense need to ask, how are you today? Because that's what I always do on the pod. So how are you today?
I am, tired. Just a spoiler for the fans out there, we're recording this in the morning after a Taylor Swift double album drop. So that's where I'm at. Just emotionally.
I listened to it on the drive over to my mother's house, and my personal favorite of these songs that I got through is the one with all the quotable lines about my songs are narcotics and that's why you can't stop listening to them. And that's totally going to be the quotable one of like me, that's, you know, the me hi I'm the problem song. That's that song.
Yeah, for me it's I cry a lot but I'm so productive. That really is like the tagline of my entire life. Yeah.
Nick is not a Taylor Swift person, but we told him to listen to Folklore. So hopefully he has at least experienced some Taylor Swift in his life.
I did. I enjoyed that. But I'm more concerned about the use of the apostrophe in the title. That's kind of what I'm focused on this morning, or the lack of an apostrophe, I should say.
Considering that it comes from a lyric where there is no apostrophe, it's correct. But that's, you have to know that that's the lyric, and that in the lyric, it's correct not to have an apostrophe to know that the title is correct. So I can understand the people who are debating who have not actually listened to it. So Call the Midwife. We are on season 13, which is a very unlucky number for seasons. Though I'm very proud of them not for skipping it. I feel like this season, we are one episode away from the finale, has definitely not been the luckiest season that we've had so far. But before we get to the Matthew in the room, we should probably talk about at least the things that we liked about this season. Because there have been some good things. My personal favorite, just to start off, is the fact that they finally figured out what to do with the buckles. You know, because I have always felt like the buckles are a little bit of a vestigial tale. Like they're artifacts from like earlier seasons, the same way that like Vanessa Redgrave's voiceover is kind of like this artifact that just sits there. And I really love the fact that they finally figured out that like the buckles are a really great way to like bring in the outside world, and having Violet like run for mayor has been such a smart choice, and it's one of my favorite things that they've done this season. And I just really wanted to highlight that as like, you know, if there's one thing in the Call of the Midwife this season that I'm really glad that they've done and I really want them to stick with, it's making the buckles like the entryway to the outside world. So Megan, how about you? How do you feel about this season of Call of the Midwife?
I think my favorite thing has been the student nurses. I feel like those can be hit or miss sometimes, but this season I've like really, for both Rosalind and Nurse Highland, for the life of me, I cannot remember her first.
Joyce.
We just watched episode 7. Thank you, Joyce. I just watched episode 7, so I'm just like, Claudine. I was like, no.
Right. We have just discovered that that's not really her name, but it is kind of her name. And I feel like we're just going to continue to call her Joyce.
Yeah.
Because that's the name she wants. So let's go with that.
Yeah. But sometimes you get duds that are just like, you're not that interesting. And I feel like both Rosalind and Joyce have brought a lot to the show. And I like was interested every time they had their own plots this season.
I also feel like, you know, they kind of go back and forth every other season. Like they introduce a nun or they introduce a group of nuns and then they introduce midwives. Then they introduce nuns and they introduce midwives. And a couple of seasons ago, they introduced Nurse Nancy. And then we had to have a nun arrive, which was Sister Veronica. So Nancy has kind of had two seasons of no students to kind of interact with. Instead, she's sort of been like the replacement for Helen George as Trixie goes older. Like she's the fashionable one. She's the partier. And I feel like having this wave of nurses come in this season has been really good for her, too. Like it gives her a group to work with. It gives her more to do. The whole union episode where she goes out with them, I loved that. Like, I thought that was great for her.
Yeah.
Nick, how about you? What's one thing you really loved this season?
Okay. Well, one thing
I know
is,
that you're mad at this season. So
I'm mad about things, but there's sort of a double-edged sword on one thing I like is that they gave Cyril something to do. They gave him a purpose. But that also keys into one of the things I dislike about the season that we can discuss later. And one other thing I just have to mention is Sister Monica Joan with the moon landing. I mean, I just love her, you know, how she is being the oldest nun, yet the most into science, and how she steals the rocket ship toy, you know, and it's like, oh, this is Apollo 8. It's been superseded. I must protect it. I love that. It's always fun. And I always enjoy when they bring the historical bits into it. But also, Sister Monica Joan, not as much talk about wanting to die. So that was, was also a good feature this season. So there you go.
Yeah. Sister Monica Joan being a space nerd was absolutely delightful. That was incredible. Yeah.
I have to say that there was a point there where they were sort of making fun of Sister Monica Joan being so old. And there was sort of a sense of like Sister Monica Joan had outlived her usefulness as a character and they didn't seem to know what to do with her. And I feel like we've gotten past that. And I think that's actually a really good feature of this season is that they've sort of figured out what to do with Sister Monica Joan again. And that I don't feel like she's purposeless anymore. And I liked that a lot about this season. Just in general, like, I liked her interactions with Sister Veronica. I have to say, I also really like the fact that they toned down Sister Veronica and they channeled her better. Like, I understand that she was supposed to be, like, annoying last season and that she was supposed to, like, be working on fitting in and all that. And that was supposed to be, like, a source of conflict. But I have to say that this season, I liked her a lot better and I thought they channeled her a lot better. Just in general. Also, I just like Rebecca Gethings. I think Megan, what else, just in terms of like all of the guest stars, what would you say, would you like with the usual, like, cause you know, every episode has like a group of guest stars that come in. Which ones would you say were highlights this season?
I mean, like right off the bat, Rosie Jones was just sensational. And also I'm kind of like, maybe you shouldn't have put her in the premiere because she set the bar so high. But like that is obviously the standout. I think as far as cases are concerned, I think like episode 7 had the most like the gut wrenching with the syphilis and the who is the baby, and I called it in the first 5 seconds when she was like, your father's come, he's not, like, your father's coming home. He's not my father. He's not supposed to be here till Christmas. I was like, oh God, he's the dad. But I think in general, like, the cases have been very interesting this season. I think they've done a good job of, like, leveling out of, like, these are going to work out well, and these are going to be the tragic ones, and sort of, they're not all happening at one time, and sort of, like, leveling out what's happening. But yeah, Rosie Jones for sure is 5-star favorite for the season.
I did like the fact that we had one that was sort of an in-house with Cliff. I thought that was also, or with Cliff Parcisi, who is, sorry, I referred him as the actor's name. But like, yeah, I love the fact that Fred Buckle was a case this season. I thought that was also really smart. It helped tie in Violet's run for mayor. And it also, again, gave the Buckles something to do. Which I always feel is something like, you know, there's always a feeling that like Fred has something to do and that he can like always be walking around like fixing things and so forth. But having him actually get hurt, having like the actual fear of like he could die, reminding us that these characters are mortal and can get hurt and aren't always just there as like saviors. You know, that always really that I always feel like that's a really smart choice. And having it be Fred was actually a really, you know, I didn't see that coming. And I thought that was a really smart episode.
Yeah. And right after his near death, he gets like 2 tons of turnips delivered. So we're right back to peak Fred after that.
All I could think of, I don't know if you ever saw, there was a famous Twitter thread about a guy who had thousands of pounds of rice show up at the door in a truck. And when the turnip showed up, I was like, if Twitter existed in 1969, yeah, that would be the turnip thread. Anyway, and then, of course, there's Trixie. I had real hopes for her marriage to Matthew. And, you know, it's funny because this season started off, you know, the same with Nolly. And one of the things that I remember reading about Nolly when I was looking through is all of her disastrous marriages and how this was a staple of soap operas in the 60s and 70s. And I was like, man, it's still a staple of soap operas today, because I already know from all the gossip across the pond that Matthew is probably out of here after one season. And yet, somehow, I didn't really see how much I would dislike him coming.
Listen, I will fully admit, I was not a religious watcher of the show until I started recapping it. Mm-hmm. I, like, signed up to recap it because it is my mother's favorite show of all time. Just, like, not when it's not on, she's rewatching it. That's how. So, like, I am very familiar with it, and I watch it when I'm home, but I had not watched it. And then watching this season, Annie can tell you, I flagged it like episode 2, I think, at the latest. I was like, something's up with Matthew. What's going on? And from that, it just got worse every episode. And I had to call my mom and be like, hold on. What am I crazy? Like, we're supposed to like him, right? Like, has he always been this much of just like a condescending douche? Like,
no, I mean, that's the thing, is that he was sort of like almost a fairy tale for Trixie when he came in. Like, here is this guy who has tons of money, who thinks she's just the greatest thing since sliced bread, and here he is going to literally lift her out of poverty and move her bag and baggage up the class ladder from working class nurse to middle class housewife. And he's not even going to ask her to give up her job, because he knows that she loves her job, even though that is so not actually period appropriate, right? Like, he is a fantasy man, the same way that Stephen McGann's doctor is a fantasy man because he's Thomas's husband. And so, of course, she writes him as the fantasy man.
And not to mention that Matthew is an aristocrat who's a crusader for the poor and who, like, single-handedly saves Nanata's house from being, like, sold or destroyed or whatever they were going to do with it. So you're like, this couldn't be any more perfect. And they had a perfect, well, the wedding wasn't perfect, but, like, they seemed perfectly happy at the end of season 12. But, yeah, Megan, right away, things turn.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is that, like, no, their wedding isn't perfect, but their wedding is perfect for them. Like, they had the catastrophe wedding that's perfect for them kind of thing at the end of season 12. Like, it really is like one of those things where you're like, you think that and especially because, as I said, Nurse Nancy didn't have any buddies. Like, she had no buddies at all for the last 2 seasons. And you could literally see the show, like, positioning her into the Trixie spot. Almost like Helen George was going to be sort of like moving on from this show and we needed a new one, right? And so I sort of like went into this season almost thinking that like they might like really be like starting to write her out. And instead this happened. I didn't see it coming.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the rumors coming out too. And I remember thinking, well, how are they going to do this? And I guess they didn't do it very well. Or we don't know for sure at this point, but I don't know. They had to take what seemed like a perfect relationship and wreck it in like two episodes.
Well, I mean, okay, I have to say that their reasoning behind it is not the worst, okay? Turning it into he's an idiot who lost all his money and he didn't manage the finances properly because he was too dumb to talk to his wife was the first, was actually believable. I'll give you that. I will also give you that in his reaction to losing all his money, the freak out that we had in episode 7 and episode 6 and 7 basically are really, like, I actually did think that Ollie Ricks did a great job with that. Like, he was very believable. And I also think that there was a lot of class stuff that the seasons before sort of glossed over that the show really did sort of like, you know, that exists there that we could just sort of yank out of the ether and just sort of sprinkle all over the place that we haven't been dealing with. And I did think that that also was really helpful, that they had very much glossed over the fact that Trixie is working class, that crossing class lines in England is much harder than they were making it seem, and that these would really be, that this would really be an issue in their marriage that no one had dealt with. And so I feel like the fact that they brought all those things to the fore really helped. But it was also really, it really was a shocking 180. Yeah. That being said, how much do we hate Matthew now?
Oh.
I think you can totally, it's understandable. Yeah, he's freaking out that he doesn't have any money. And okay, he tried to keep it from Trixie. But just like the amount of passive aggression that there was and him like snapping at her and just being the worst because she was spending money, and I'm like, she doesn't know you don't have money. Like, you can't, you're not telling her, and you're, but you're mad that she's going to Harrods. And then the way he throws that in her face in episode 6, and it's like, that's not her fault. Like, you didn't say anything. Mm-hmm. Not even a like, hey, money's tight, let's like lay off the credit card this month. Like, nothing. I don't know if they were using credit cards at that point, but like, you know, the store, whatever it was, like, he didn't even like give her a hint, and then he wants to act like she's like purposely spending their money that they don't have. And it's Trixie, she is used to poverty. Had he said anything, she would have quit it immediately.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so he's just painting her with this brush. I was like, this is an act, like, you screwed up and you're blaming her for it. And I wasn't here for it at all. I can't.
Yeah.
He's so pretty to look at, but I was so mad.
Well, what's interesting is they do bring him back to what a typical male of the late 60s would be, because we sort of think he's really progressive. And then when a crisis happens, he reverts back to what you would expect from especially an aristocratic male. Mm-hmm. And I think some of it came from a place that he wants Trixie to have the nice things and he feels responsible and he couldn't provide and he lashed out clearly, but it was really over the top. And it was just hard to kind of square that with what we had seen before. It was, you know, and also though, his mom, I don't, does he have mommy issues? Because she was pretty tough on him at that board meeting. She was like, you're cut off, son. Sorry. That was interesting. I wasn't expecting that. But you know, as we get in Call the Midwife, like, all the female characters are interesting. Like, even the mother, like, I want to see more of what's going on there. I mean, I kind of remembered that from previous seasons. There was hints about that he wasn't entirely happy in his aristocratic life before he met Trixie. So I think a lot of that comes back. And so it's not completely ridiculous, but it's a really hard pivot from one pole to another. So,
yeah. Now, the other thing about Matthew and Trixie that I found to be really fascinating this season also was that we had basically, every time they had issues, we saw them going to Fred and Violet as sort of models for, you know, marriage. And it sort of struck me that we don't actually have a lot of marriage models in Call the Midwife. You know, most of the midwives are single. The nuns obviously are single. The only other one we have, you know, is the Turners, right? And the Turners are so focused on the whole adoption issue that that sort of gets pushed by the wayside. And I thought that that was a very interesting choice for the show to make, to kind of hold up the buckles as the family that you want to sort of like emulate. Again, also very much focusing on the working class family as the ideal, more than the Turners, which are much more of a middle class lifestyle. And I thought that that was very interesting, because I would have thought that Matthew would go to like Dr. Turner more than he would to Fred. And I thought that, you know, especially with the whole, like, we've had Matthew sort of saying, I don't really like the aristocratic lifestyle, even though, like, when push came to shove, he went right back to it. You know, I thought that was a very interesting choice by the show to do that. And I just wonder if that is something that we think the show will also lean into, or do we just think that Matthew needs just does Trixie just need whole man disposal service?
Quite possibly. I mean, I did think it was really interesting, though, that you, when you look at the buckles, you have the kind of the inverse relationship. You have the wife is the mayor, and you have the husband trying to adapt to a non-traditional role, which was kind of the inverse of what you have with Trixie and Matthew. So I agree. I thought that was interesting to kind of have those stories play off of each other. And again, like, every time we see anything from the buckles, it's interesting, because I feel like over the course of any one season, they get like 30 minutes of screen time, maybe. And I thought there was a little bit more this year, which was nice to see, because it's an interesting story and it's very unique. In fact, I had to look up when you know, she was running for mayor. I'm like, wait a minute, there's a mayor of the East End? Like, I don't get it. Like, what? You know, so, but it happens. Right, right. I was like, no, well, she's not the mayor of London. I know that much. But that was a cool storyline. It was interesting to see how he would adapt his life to that as well. And it is a sort of like an inverse of what you had with Trixie and Matthew. So surely that was intended.
Megan, do you feel she needs whole man disposal service?
I mean, yeah, that's where I'm at. Like, I like try to remember, I am looking at it very much with like a 2024 feminist lens, and then try to remember that it's the 60s, but I again it's the abruptness of the shift, I think, for me. Had he been a little bit more conservative, had he put up more of a fight of her trying to keep her job, I think that in last season it might have made this season easier to digest. But like when she was on a case and he called her because the baby was crying, I was like, get out. Absolutely not. Like, what are you, the baby's crying, you have a headache because the baby is crying? What is she supposed to do? No. And I think, like, so, like, it's that kind of stuff where it's, like, it's not even the money crisis and him being a man about that. It's just, like, there have been little things. The way he talked to her when he was teaching her to drive, I was, like, that has nothing to do with money. You were just being so mean for no reason. And then, again, like, oh, you can have your job and you can keep this job, but it needs to be second to you, like, cooking me dinner, is like, what is it that it just shows like a fundamental miscommunication about like what the priorities are here and who Trixie is as a person. Because I feel like she was always transparent about like, this means so much to me. And it felt like he understood that last season. And then this season is like, he does not understand who she is. In episode 7, he springs this New York thing on her without even talking to her, like giving up being a midwife to go to New York is something that Trixie would, and she might have considered it had he talked to her about like, hey, here's the opportunity. This is what makes sense as a family. Do you want to do this? And instead he's just like, no, you should come. You should, like, you'll get to be like a fashionista in New York. And it's like, that's not on her list of, like, that's not on her, on the bucket list for her. Yeah. So like, what are you doing? It just doesn't make any sense, though. They just need it to make sense so that he can get out of here.
Yeah. And for the guy that couldn't deal with the kid crying, he pulls the kid up and takes him to New York. How's that gonna work? You know, that was bizarre,
right? Seriously.
And he fired the nanny. There's not gonna be a nanny in New York. So is this kid exactly gonna learn to like flip warehouses? What is happening?
The other thing, and I don't know how much I don't know how much this is going to play into episode 8 because I have not watched past episode 7. I know that Nick, because he has PBS Passport, which had the early access, has watched to the end of the season, but I have not because I watch with the I watch with the air dates. But Nanada's house. Basically, he saved Nanada's house, but he didn't actually sign the thing. So when everything gets repossessed, that means Nanada's house is back in danger, correct? Am I understanding that correctly?
I think it is no longer in danger because he signed the lease over to them. That's my understanding, but I am not privy to the you know, the workings of real estate in 1969 East End. But I felt like that was resolved, that we shouldn't be worried about that, but maybe we should be. There could be a loophole or who knows what.
Okay, because that was my big question coming out of episode 7. When he lost everything, they took everything back. My first question was, is Nanada's house in danger again? Does this put this? Does that put them back on the chopping block? Should we be panicking?
I think they wanted you to think that at the end of episode 6, because that's what Trixie says. It's like, oh, at least you signed the house over to the nuns. And he's like, oops. But then you have the scene with Monica, Sister Monica Joan. Not Sister Monica Joan.
Sister Julianne.
Sister Julianne. And he has her sign the paperwork. And she's like, I need to go clear this with people. He's like, nope, do it now. And so I think that saved it, because then he walks outside and they take the car. So I think he managed to sign it over before it actually got taken from him.
Okay. All right. That was something that I was not sure about. And I came out of episode 7 uncertain whether or not I was supposed to be panicking about that, or if that was something that was actually resolved. Okay, so, and you say that in episode 8, that's not actually a factor. So, okay, that makes me feel a lot better. Okay, cool. I do assume, okay, I know that we have not actually watched episode 8, but I assume that Trixie is going after him. Do we know if she's coming back?
We don't know. It ends on a cliffhanger in that regard. We don't know for sure.
I feel I have a lot of feelings about this, because Helen George is literally one of the last people. I think at this point, she's the last midwife from that original season. We still have some of the nuns who are left over. We have Cliff who's left over. We have Fred who's left over. We have we technically have Shalay, who is Dr. Turner's wife, who was a nun and is now a nurse. But at this point, we're really running out of, we're running out of like the original cast at this point. And Trixie really has sort of been like, because we lost those first original midwives who were sort of the leads, Trixie sort of defaulted to lead, and she really has been the lead for 13 seasons at this point. Do we want her to come back? Do we feel like this show, how would we feel about a show without Trixie Franklin? I think that's my first question.
That's tricky, right? Because it's kind of a conditional answer in that, what do they have for a divorced Trixie? You know what I mean? What does that look like?
What is she, does she get divorced, or is she just suddenly, you know how Mrs. Hughes wanders around with a Mrs. on the end of her name, right? Or like, there's so many like characters in British television who wander around with Mrs. on their names. Grantchester, Mrs. C, who is Mrs. M, who was never actually divorced from that first husband, and then he luckily gets killed off so she can marry the next one. But like, does she even divorce him, or does she just wander around as Mrs. Trixie now, and without actually being divorced?
I mean, if I were Helen George, I would find that to be boring, to know that like there's not gonna really, you can't do that much with her personal life in that regard. So then it's just, she's just doing cases of the week, and like the occasional like John Oakley. Like I wouldn't want that. Like I feel like if she stays, like she and Matthew have to be over so that you open up that lane again to have more things for Trixie to do. But I also feel like, has she become like the Meredith Grey of Call the Midwife, where like she's done all the things? Like, what is there left for Trixie to experience in this world? Is it time? Like, is it time for, are we ready for Nancy to be at the center? And I think like that's that, if you don't get rid of Matthew at this point, then I don't know that it makes sense to keep Trixie.
Nick, how do you feel? How would you feel if Trixie were to leave?
I would miss Trixie incredibly. I mean, I think she's been a fantastic character over the years. There's a lot of, you know, we even in this season get sort of back to her addiction issues, which I had kind of forgotten. And she's a complex character. She's an interesting character. You know, as you mentioned, there's a sort of like class movement up and down. I do think that on the issue of divorce, should it happen, I think it would be ridiculous for her being a modern woman not to consider divorce. That would not, you know, if it gets to that point. We don't know. I mean, I don't want to give spoilers, but it's no spoiler to say we really don't know exactly, even at the end of the season, what is going to happen here. But I do feel like, because for those of us who have watched all the 13 seasons, and I am one of those people, she is one of the last vestiges to the original nurse crew. And I would really miss that. It would feel, I mean, I would get used to it. Like, one of the great things about the show is that because the writing is so strong and the directors are so strong, like, they bring new people in and it still works. That being said, Trixie has been a constant for such a long time. It'd be hard to imagine.
Speaking of characters that come and go, one of the other things that really bothered me about this season, and you touched on it a little bit, was Cyril. And this has been, this is part of the problem with Call the Midwife writ large. And that's the fact that it is a white show for white people filled with white characters. It is 1969. By losing Leona Elliott, they basically suddenly found themselves in 1969, 2 years before, like, the nationalist movement in the UK blows up, without a real central black character to focus on. Like, they've pulled in Joyce, and Joyce clearly is going to become a central character. We've met her ex-husband now, or her estranged husband. We now know a bit more about her backstory and her real name and all that. And clearly they're setting her up to basically take over that story. But because they only really have a very few characters of color, like, literally only one, and then they had to move another one in and they had to build her up. This has been such a problem for Call the Midwife. And it's one of those things that made me sort of realize how much I have taken for granted. You brought up Meredith Grey earlier, Grey's Anatomy, and how much Shondaland really just made it so that American television just assumes that there are many characters of color always around, and how much Call the Midwife really suffers from not having that. And I wanted you guys to sort of weigh in on how Call the Midwife can sort of fix that, or if it should fix that, or what we, how this can get solved, because it's a real, I felt that problem so much this season in a way that I had not up until like a couple of seasons ago. And this season, it was glaring.
Yeah, that's a really tough question. I think some of what happened was circumstantial. I mean, when, I forget the actress's name, when she decided to leave.
That's Leona Elliott is the name of the actress. Is the name of the actress. I cannot think of her character's name. I'm sorry.
Right, like Lucille is the character name. When she decided to leave the show, which was unexpected because she had been in 5 or 6 seasons. She wasn't, you know, just a new character. They kind of box themselves in a corner with this storyline. And I mean, it drove me, my wife, we watch it together. It drove us nuts this whole season that there was not a single reference to Lucille at all. I mean, they try to give Cyril something to do, which was great. We talked about it. He becomes like a social worker, and it's a very interesting perspective for someone like Cyril to be in that position. But it's as if she just, disappeared from the planet. We get nothing, not a phone call, not a letter, nothing. So you have no idea. And I mean, honestly, when they replace it with the Joyce storyline, which I think you can kind of look at as maybe a bit problematic in general. It's like, why is the only character of color? Does she need this backstory? I just was kind of uncomfortable the whole time. And I don't know what the solution is. Maybe they need to bring in more, you know, more characters. I mean, obviously they, the issue, there are often characters of colors who are the patients. That has happened quite a bit. And there's even a bit of an introduction to something more in episode 8 that I can't talk about in that regard. But yes, it has been an issue. It's clearly going to be continued to be an issue. And to some extent, they are fighting against, you know, how historically accurate do they want this to be and how much representation do they want? And I think that it's been tough for them to find that balance from day one, really.
Yeah, it's been weird for me because I think also just like as a person of color, like specifically like a half black, half white person, I was always intrigued when they would have moms show up at the midwife center with like clearly biracial babies, and just in the show that's like of this time period, I was like, that should be a big, they're not making any big deal out of the fact that like she has a black husband and off like they'll be out of wedlock, and I was like, that would be a problem in this particular time period, like she wouldn't, it just wouldn't be openly accepted. And it's like, it is strange that like you have a show that's like, she's openly accepted because they want it to be representational and they want people to feel seen. But then at the same time, you only have two actors of color in your like series regular cast. So it is this like weird inconsistency of like, no, like everybody here is welcome. But I was like, but it is also 1969. So like they do pick and choose. And I don't think they always pick and choose correctly of when race is going to be an issue. And I think they could benefit mm-hmm. from some more consistency, and that might help them organically. Because like my thing is, easy way to do it is that like Joyce is by herself in the situation. Like there's no other nurses or nuns of color. She's the only other black person is Cyril, and the only conversation they've had is she going to go to church? And I'm just like, she would naturally be looking out for people that look like her for a sense of community, especially as an immigrant, that like, is she trying to find other people from the island? I think that's an organic way that they could bring in more people, is that like Joyce needs more people of color to hang out with because she wouldn't spend all of her time talking to these white nurses about everything that's happening. She would try to find people that look like her. And the fact that she and Cyril have only had one conversation is also like insane. If they are the only two like dark-skinned people within the radius of each other, they would naturally be seeking each other out just for that sense of camaraderie, because there is whether the show addresses it or not, they are dealing with racism in East London at this time, and the show just isn't talking about it, but like they yeah. would be hanging out because they're the only two that can relate to that.
Yeah. And I mean, we are 18 at this point, we are 18 months from 1971 and the whole Enoch Powell and the explosion of serious racism in, especially in the London area and right where they are, especially around the poorer parts of London and in Poplar. And, you know, we can't. There's no way that Call the Midwife can't address that in season 15. I'm pretty sure that they are already like greenlit through season 15 and so forth. So it's not like they're not going to be able to, they can't avoid addressing it when they get there. And they should be building towards that. And the problem is that because they don't have enough characters of color, they really haven't. They haven't been able to do that. And that's such a frustrating failing of the show that I am. It drives me a little nuts. And I really wish that the show would just fix it. Like, you have a huge group of nurses come in. Cast a few more black actors. It's not that hard, you know?
So it starts off in what, the mid, like 1950, whatever, when the expectation that it was probably all white probably makes a certain amount of sense. And yes. Did they think they'd be in 1969 ever? Or did they plan? They could have started planning for it in 1962 or 64, but it seems like they're just trailing behind history quite a bit here. And it's hard. It's going to be hard for them to catch up.
Right. I know. And I can get that. And I also understand there has been a revolution in television and in representation since they started, you know, like one of the, I ran into a random episode of Miss Fisher, which was from like 2012. And I was genuinely startled at the casual, like whiteness of it and like microaggression racism that was just sort of in there. And I was like, whoa. And I was like, well, yeah, this episode is 12 years old. And then I was like, whoa, this episode is 12 years old. A, I'm old. And B, man, television changed a lot in the last decade. And I don't even really appreciate it sometimes. And I think that's something that Call the Midwife is also sort of like not dealing with. The television has changed out from under them and they need to change with it and they haven't gotten there. Anyway, so we are getting close on time. So final thoughts about season 13 and what you'd like to see in season 14. Nick?
Oh, boy. Well, I...
As someone who has actually seen the finale.
I won't tell you anything about the finale. I mean, we'll say that, like, this has been my least favorite season of Call the Midwife. I think that there is a lot of... the medical storylines continue to be as good as they always are. The births, that, like, that's all good. It was the soapish nature of the relationships that kind of turned me off because I felt like... That was a little different from what I recalled. We talked about the whole Matthew thing. We talked about the disappearance of Lucille. And it felt a lot like General Hospital, Young and Restless, or too much like that to me at times. And I've watched those programs, so I don't speak from a lack of experience. But you know, it's... The quality is still there. And like, you know, you're still, I don't think I shed as many tears this episode, this season. It's always good for a good cry, but I didn't get too invested in a lot of the stories and I'm not exactly sure why. But that being said, I think the last two episodes are pointing in some interesting directions. As we spoke about before, they need to resolve the Matthew and Trixie issue satisfactorily. I'll really be sitting here hoping that they do something a lot less clumsy than what they did with Lucille, that they figure out something that makes sense and that they keep Trixie. Cause I'd like to see her keep going, but yeah, more of the Buckles. I enjoy the Buckles, get them in more. I also have to say, thank goodness the issue with May and her adoption is finally settled. That had, when they scratched that itch again, it made me very angry because I was kind of like, this is just, it just felt, just useless, and it didn't make any sense and why they threw that in. And they even had, I forget, they even had her, the poor kid almost drowned on the beach. I'm like, just leave little May alone. She's happy. She's been adopted. Let's move on from that story. So that's, those are my, I guess, my final thoughts in the season. I have some hope that things will turn around, but wasn't a super great season as far as I'm concerned.
Megan?
Ooh, I will also say that, yeah, there were no, like, there were some misty-eyed moments, but there were no tearjerker moments. And that was sort of like, that is what you watch the show for. Everybody knows, if Matthew comes back, he needs a serious attitude adjustment, but I'm rooting for him to just be gone. I'm so sorry, Ollie Ricks. You're so beautiful, but like, I cannot with this guy anymore. And I do think that even if they do keep Trixie, I would like to see more from Nancy, because I feel like we did have a lot with her personally last season. This season, she was very much like the nurse mentor. And like, I wanted to spend more time with her, like why, like her fighting the union. And I think like her having a Norma Rae moment next season would be great. So yeah, I would like more from Nancy. Less Matthew, dialed that down to a 0%. And yeah, bring back the tears, man. We need some catharsis.
All right. Thank you both for coming on and helping me do an episode without Lacey, my first one ever. Nick, can you tell people where to find you on the internet?
Sure. I mean, I'm not no longer on X, so I can't put that out, but I am on Threads for what it's worth. You can find me at N Scalera. Good luck finding me. I don't really talk about TV that much, but I am there. It's a very weird platform. We're trying to figure it out. But yeah, that's it for me.
Megan?
I am at Mego Inc. MEGGOINC on, I'm not calling it X, Twitter. That's where I'm at.
All right. And I'm Annie Bundle across social media and the associate editor here at Television. So just Google me because... like Tigger, I'm the only one. And if you don't want any of that and just want the hard stuff, the site and the pod can be found at televisions.org, on most social media sites at televisions, and at televisions under, or at tele underscore visions, excuse me, and at televisions blog, all one word, on Facebook. There you can find all sorts of things like news, updates, recaps, listicles, reviews of all your favorite shows. And if you like what we do and you want to see more of it, just hit that donate button up top to contribute. When you donate, you can get access to PBS Passport, which is the member benefit streaming service with early access to things like Call the Midwife, which is how Nick watched all of the episodes before they're actually out. And you can watch all episodes of Mr. Bates versus the Post Office before they're done, which is the other show that Megan is recapping for us. And you'll be able to watch all episodes of Maryland when they come out, and all episodes of Guilt Season 3 when they come out. And all episodes of Professor T and Grant Chester and D.I. Ray when they come out this June. Come donate, read our stuff, and thanks for listening, and we'll be back with Lacey next week. Thanks.